This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
I've been known to burn too bright. I've been known to flash and then go dark.
Meg Hutchinson is well known as a Massachusetts-based folk singer and songwriter who we've had on this program before. She's a hugely talented musician who has struggled with mental illness, an occasional subject of her music, including this song called Being Happy.
Let the old year be behind me. What's the harm in being happy? What's the harm in being happy?
Meg Hutchinson's experience with bipolar disorder is the subject of a new documentary. In the film, she describes a frightening breakdown that she suffered 9 years ago when her younger sister, Tessa, checked her into a hospital against her will. That's where doctors diagnosed her with bipolar disorder for the first time.
I thought you'd given up on me.
I think the day that you were committed was the day that I've felt like I loved you more fiercely than I've ever loved you. It wasn't like a calm or a human love that I was feeling. It was like this animal protectiveness.
I think back about it, and now I feel like the most loving thing you've ever done was to know when you needed to put me into the hospital against my own judgment or will that day.
The film is called Pack Up Your Sorrows, a story of illness, hope, and transformation, and it premieres tonight at the Regent Theater in Arlington. Meg Hutchinson joins us in the studio to talk about her experience with bipolar and her mission to help others who are struggling with mental illness. Thanks for coming, and it's good to see you.
It's great to be back.
So that hospitalization was a bit of a turning point, but not the first sign that something was wrong. When did you first realize that you were struggling with bipolar?
So I was 28 years old when I was finally checked into the hospital, but I experienced my first major depression when I was 19. Hmm. So I had nearly a decade of hiding this illness, even from myself to a large extent.
Hiding it. Why hiding it?
I think at first it's a lack of understanding of the symptoms. You know, you hear talk of depression, but I always thought that that meant extreme sadness. And what I didn't know is that it's a completely physical illness. I mean, you have trouble getting out of bed. You know, it feels like having mono or some other, you know, it's hard to sleep. It's hard to function. Your brain feels incredibly foggy. It didn't occur to me that that was depression when I first experienced it. You know, I thought, right. Something, you know, I'd always
just
been
a dark
really,
mood. You got the blues. You're just a little bit sad. Right?
I'd always been such a strong, you know, overachieving person that I thought, depression happens to weak people, and I'm not weak, so this can't be depression.
Mm. When you suffer from bipolar disorder, you have the depression, but you also have the mania, right? So maybe for folks who don't know a whole lot about bipolar, can you describe sort of the cycles of what afflicts you?
Yeah, so of course it manifests a little differently in each individual. For me, it was 3 or 4 months of depression at a time, then many months of kind of, you know, normal mood during the course of the year, but also these periods of tremendous exuberance. And during those times, there's a feeling of, for me, of connection to everything and this tremendous creativity. And my brain, you know, you're making connections that don't even exist between thoughts. And you're really feeling so socially able and on top of the world. And the danger is that it goes one step further. And you really lose touch with reality and with context and with other people. And
yeah.
The more that this plays out with a untreated brain, the more extreme these cycles get. And that's what I saw unfold over the course of those 9 years. As I didn't seek treatment, each low got lower, each high got higher until that breaking point when I was 28.
Someone in my family who I was very close to suffered from bipolar, and the highs for him were extremely attractive in a way. He would pass through them and get into this dangerous zone, but it was the highs that made it difficult for him to embrace the medication, which would bring him down, down, down.
That's one of the real challenges in recognizing the illness, because each time I'd reach that high, I'd think, oh, the hard times are behind me. You know, I'd come up with some explanation for, you know, I've been through this rite of passage. I'm never going to be that low again. This is my reward. I'm out of the woods. You know, and when this keeps happening, you keep delaying treatment.
Right, right.
Oh, I miss the ride.
You grew up in the Berkshires. You were raised, as you describe it, by hippie parents. And I want to ask you about them and how that situation, that upbringing, affected your ability to get help.
You know, the family culture can have a huge impact on how you view illness and how you feel you should be treated. And in our family, if you felt a little blue, you ate more kale, you went on more nature walks, you wrote another poem. And that was just understood as this is how we work with this in our family. Of course, as we know, there's a point at which poetry and kale can't solve the problem. But we just didn't have a model for how to work with mental illness until it was at a breaking point, until luckily my younger sister had just started getting her master's in social work. And she said, I think there's a bigger problem here. You know, this isn't going to be solved by valerian root tea. And, you know.
And what did she see when you say the breaking point? What was actually going on that spelled breaking point?
So I had just returned from a tour in Europe, and I had been high all spring, higher than I'd ever been, and was extremely sleep-deprived and had been drinking and partying and really living like a rock star, and came home and suddenly was exhausted but couldn't sleep. And I fell into what's called a mixed state, where I was both high and low at the same time. So if you can imagine a body that's catatonically depressed and a brain that's just racing, and I became unable to sleep at all. And that's the point at which your thought process breaks down, your ability to make any decisions breaks down. It was like early onset Alzheimer's. I was getting lost in my own neighborhood. I couldn't remember how to turn the knobs on the washing machine the right way. And that's when I called my family and said, probably the bravest call I've ever had to make. You know, something is wrong with my brain. I need to come home.
Wow. In the film, we see an interview that you do with your mom about how she struggled to know what to do about this. So let's listen to this.
I knew you were hurting, but I didn't know how to take care of myself and take care of you.
When was the moment where you realized this was beyond your ability to fix the situation?
I didn't understand mental illness. It did not occur to me. And what you said to us when you were ill, in that you thought we would be ashamed and that the world would be better off without you, changed my whole view. I thought, I just didn't get it. I mean, I never knew any mentally ill people. I knew some depressed people, but I thought, you know, they could get over it.
Wow, I mean, that sums up so much. I mean, this idea, I never knew any mental ill people, but I knew some depressed people. I mean, I think that's such a typical thing in families that have to deal with this, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What was it like to talk to your mother about this all those years later?
I was really proud of her for her honesty. I think it's probably one of the most painful things a parent could ever go through, because you can't, you know, as my father put it, you know, they thought they could pull me through with love alone. And for them to realize the limits of that love, and for them to realize that when you're going through a mental health crisis, you can't feel love. And it was a very slow process for all of us to learn to accept Western medicine, to realize my life was really in danger if we didn't change our approach to medication in our family.
One of the most moving parts in the film is when you meet Sergeant Kevin Briggs. He's a highway patrolman known as the guardian of Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco because he saved hundreds of lives of people who are contemplating jumping from the bridge. So I want to just play this bit.
I have found that when I approach someone, instead of ordering them, being very directive and decisive as most cops are taught and trained, I tried to just go with a different approach. How are you today? How are you feeling? What's going on in your life? Give them my full attention. And then ask them, do you have any plans for tomorrow?
What moved you about that story, about Sergeant Kevin Briggs?
What struck me was the power of those ordinary questions, the power of human compassion to keep someone hanging on to that railing. And that's one of the things we easily forget. You know, we try to treat the problem with emergency measures and medication, and there is so much power in someone just standing beside you saying, I'm here, you're not alone in this. And, you know, that was the same thing my sister offered me. that compassion, that ability to love someone exactly where they are, meet them in that place. And when I read about him, I was just absolutely floored that could save hundreds of lives of people who were literally on the other side of the railing on the Golden Gate in their final moments.
And you wrote a song dedicated to him called Gatekeeper. Here it is.
How are you? What are your plans for tomorrow? Will you let me make some? And after, you can do as you will.
You're a very successful artist, folk musician. You've shown that you can manage the bipolar disorder. And some people with your illness might choose to keep it private, but you talk about it, you've helped produce a film about it. Why is it important to be so public about it?
When your life gets saved by the grace of just a few factors coming together, there's a certain debt, there's a certain sense of it's a responsibility to tell the story, because that has the potential to help someone else through that moment. And my deepest fear was that I would be unlovable if people knew about the illness, and that I would be not trusted. What I found in the 9 years since is it's been the complete opposite. I've never felt more loved, more accepted, and closer to people in my life than I have in the years that I've told my story. And when you start to tell your story, almost everyone you speak to has a loved one, a friend, a family member who has also struggled. We've got to start talking about it. The shame and the fear and the discrimination are as deadly to us as the actual disease. And if we can help other young people say, this isn't the end of your life. Yeah, it's a chronic illness, but it can be managed and you can go on and have a rich life, and this is not going to change how people think of you. That's a huge, huge shift I want to see happen.
All right, well, that's Meg Hutchinson. She's a Massachusetts-based folk singer and songwriter. Her journey with bipolar disorder is the subject of a new documentary, Pack Up Your Sorrows, a story of illness, hope, and transformation. Meg, thanks so much for coming in and sharing this story.
Thank you.
Don't let the darkness in, don't let the darkness in, oh, November.
And that film premieres tonight at the Regent Theater in Arlington. You can find more information at radioboston.org.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.